Something I did not wake up thinking I would say today. Bill Cosby is a free man. The lead starts right now. Breaking news, comedian Bill Cosby walking out of prison today after a court vacated his sexual assault conviction, saying Cosby's rights were violated, leaving the country and especially his accusers in a state of shock. The death toll rising as crews desperately dig for survivors in Surfside, Florida, and we learned that some residents complained a couple years ago that the tower was shaking all the time. And masks and the mixed messages about masks making a comeback, the new warning from the Surgeon General, especially if you're around kids. Welcome to The Lead. I'm Jake Tapper, and we start with breaking news in the national lead and the stunning ruling by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court vacating the conviction and sentence of Bill Cosby, essentially dropping the sex assault charges against the comedian and making the 83-year-old a free man. According to a Cosby family spokesperson, Bill Cosby may be making a statement soon. We'll bring that to you live if it happens. Cosby was released from prison shortly after the ruling this afternoon. He arrived at his home outside Philadelphia in Elkins Park just a few moments ago. Cosby, of course, you'll recall, was sentenced in September 2018 to 10 years in a state prison after a jury found him guilty of sexual assault for drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand at his home outside Philly in 2004. What was pivotal in today's ruling by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was a deal made back then by the man who was then the district attorney of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, Bruce Castor. Castor had announced that Cosby would not be prosecuted back then. Let's bring in CNN's Bryn Gingras. And Bryn, we should note, Castor, then the district attorney of Montgomery County, he did not think that he could successfully bring a case against Cosby over Constand's allegations. But also, he thought that by announcing publicly that there would not be a prosecution, he was helping Andrea Constand. Explain how.
Yeah, and essentially, Jake, he told CNN he was thinking since he didn't have enough evidence to bring forward a criminal case against Cosby, then, hey, you know what? Let me pave the way for people like Andrea Constand and other accusers to possibly benefit in a civil case. And so that's why Cosby basically didn't have a Fifth Amendment right to sit down for those depositions. If you remember, we learned a lot of that information of what was in that. He admitted to using Quaaludes on women. There was just a lot of information that came out of those. And then those depositions were then used to criminally charge him later by a different district attorney. So that's what the higher court in Pennsylvania is saying. You can't do that. It's not fair. It's not due process. And Cosby should be released. And that's where we are right now. And we're getting a ton of feedback and people giving comments about what happened. Many people just in shock at not only that it happened, but how quickly it happened. I mean, this opinion from the higher court coming down just before 1 o'clock. And as you can see, we already know he's home. As you said to your viewers, we're waiting to hear if Mr. Cosby will speak, although we were just told by a representative by the family that he's napping at this point. But a spokesperson did say, praise Jesus, to our one of our producers, he's innocent. Now, let me be clear. The higher court, in their opinion, did not say Cosby is innocent. It's just that his conviction was vacated. In fact, the district attorney who brought those charges in 2015 against him released a statement saying he was found guilty by a jury and now goes free on a procedural issue that is irrelevant to the facts of the crime. Prosecutors in my office will continue to follow the evidence wherever and to whomever it leads. And this is something that was also echoed by Gloria Allred, an attorney, of course, who represented a lot of these accusers who did come forward against Bill Cosby.
Bryn, more than 50 women, of course, 50 yeah. have publicly accused Cosby of assaulting them or raping them. Was Andrea Constand's case the only one that can make it to court, that did make it to court? Could any of these other women file charges or whatever and ultimately end up sending Bill Cosby back behind bars?
I mean, Jake, the short answer is no. The higher court said certainly the Andrea Constand case can't go, you can't go back boards on that. But also the issue here is the statute of limitations. You know, if you remember back in 2015 when Kevin Steele brought this case forward, it was just days away from the statute of limitations and Andrea Constand's case expiring. So now we have women who have come forward since, of course, that you show with that, you know, cover of the magazine. Their allegations are from decades ago. So no, unless possibly, maybe, and the legal analyst can speak better to this, new evidence comes forward, maybe. But, of course, it's very doubtful at this point, Jake.
All right, Brent, thanks so much. And we will talk to our legal experts about that in 1 second. But first, let's go to CNN's Jason Carroll, who is right near Cosby's home, right outside Philly in Elkins Park. Jason, this has been real quick, from the ruling by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to Bill Cosby being released to Bill Cosby going home.
And to crowds starting to gather now outside his home. If you take a look, you've got a lot of media out here. Some of that noise that you're hearing are some of those people who support the accusers, some of those from the Me Too movement who are visibly and audibly upset about the court's decision. Cosby said to be inside celebrating with his family, with his supporters. And in fact, just a short while ago, we heard from Cosby's attorney, who said the following. He said, "We are grateful and happy that not only was the conviction vacated, but he was discharged, meaning case closed." So right now what we are waiting for is Cosby and one of his spokespeople to come outside. We have heard that that could happen, Jake, actually any moment from now. But until then, what we're doing is just getting reaction in from various folks about this decision. I want to read another reaction very quickly. It says here, this one comes from Andrew White. He's Cosby's spokesperson, who said, "I want to thank the Supreme Court, who saw the light and saw the truth. Mr. Cosby was originally given a deal by Bruce Castor in which he was granted immunity." You heard that being talked about just a short while ago. "He gave up his Fifth Amendment rights in hopes that he would get back to work, back to his life, and he always showed up for any legal matters and questions on his own accord. Charges should never have been brought against Mr. Cosby." So at this point, we are waiting for Bill Cosby, or at the very least, one of his representatives to come out here in front of his home. We are expecting a statement could come at any time. Jake?
All right, Jason, thank you so much. We'll come back to you. Let's bring in two legal voices on this for their expertise. Jennifer Rogers is a former federal prosecutor. Joey Jackson is a criminal defense attorney. Jennifer, I guess the big question a lot of people have is, well, there are all these other accusers. If Andrea Constand's case cannot be recharged, what about them? Is there any chance that any of his other accusers could then testify, that the prosecutors in Montgomery County could bring new charges, or is this it?
I think this is it, Jake. It's a statute of limitations issue. Only if any accusers show up with events that happen within the statute of limitations, and apparently that's not the case. These are very, very old accusations. So, you know, the opinion wasn't about a lack of evidence. It didn't say, you know, there wasn't enough evidence or anything that might leave the door open to another trial where they could gather more evidence. This was a legal issue, a legal technicality. And so there's no way to bring a completely new case, which is what you would have to have here if it's older than the statute of limitations allows.
Hmm. So, Joey, Cosby's lawyer told CNN, and this is what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling says, that the court vacated the conviction and the sentence on the basis of Cosby's due process rights were violated during the process for his civil deposition. And just to explain this again for folks, what happened was the DA did not think he could bring successful charges against Cosby. And so as to help Andrea Constand bring civil charges against him, announced that he would not prosecute Cosby, thus removing Cosby's ability to refuse to testify against himself because there was no self-incrimination possible in the criminal court because he wasn't going to be criminally prosecuted. So Cosby was deposed. And then that deposition was ultimately used against him by other prosecutors in violation of that agreement. Having nothing to do with whether or not you think Cosby is guilty or innocent or should be in prison or there shouldn't be a statute of limitations, do you see justification in the ruling by the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania?
So just based on the law, you explained it, I mean, in an excellent way. So there are people, obviously, the victims most importantly, who are very concerned, frustrated, and I'm sure, you know, shocked and just mortified by the fact that they went so far and came together and here we are. But just speaking objectively, right, on the law, what the court said was, listen, this has to be about the law. And we're going to bar any prosecution moving forward, as Jennifer noted, and here's why. You have an instance where you have an elected official representing the Commonwealth. That elected official made a pronouncement. What he did is a year later, he investigated these charges. Like it, don't like it, hate them, love them, whatever. He said, I'm not moving forward. But what I will do is I'm going to say, I'm going to not prosecute, and I'm going to announce that so that Cosby can sit for and otherwise participate in depositions. What are those? They're legal proceedings where attorneys ask you specific questions as to your conduct. Now, under normal circumstances, Jake, when you're facing prosecution, you could say, I plead the fifth, I'm not speaking. But because the prosecutor said, I'm not prosecuting you, he had no basis, that is Cosby, to plead the fifth and otherwise had to answer questions about Quaaludes, about Benadryl, about everything or anything that he may have did in the past as it related to women. The court said that he would not have been in that position if he did not believe you when you said he wasn't going to be prosecuted. And the only reason, said the court, that he sat for that deposition is because you compelled him to. You basically said, I'm not going to be prosecuted. His lawyers allowed him to speak. He speaks. And then you use that against him in a criminal proceeding. That's a no-no. We're going to respect the fact that the prosecutor basically said, we're not going to prosecute you, and we're going to have any prosecutor moving forward respect that as well. There will be no prosecution moving forward, period, says the court, because it's fundamentally unfair. A person has a Fifth Amendment right against self-incriminating himself. Mm-hmm. He incriminated himself, and that was based upon his reliance upon the DA. That's the cold, hard facts of the law, and that's essentially what the Supreme Court said. Moving forward, the case is now over.
Right. When the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania makes a deal, it has to stick with it no matter who is administering the justice. I guess that's the conclusion. Jennifer, the new Montgomery County, Pennsylvania District Attorney Kevin Steele, he said his team is going to continue to follow the evidence wherever it leads, to whomever it leads. Do you think that it's likely that there are going to be any other charges?
I don't. I mean, if they follow evidence that leads to new accusations within the last few years, then maybe. But I don't think anyone's holding out hope for that. I mean, there's going to be no new charges based on the conduct that we know about now.
Jennifer Rogers, Joey Jackson, thanks to both. Appreciate it. Plus, more breaking news. The House of Representatives voting to establish a select committee to investigate that January 6th insurrection. How many Republicans voted in favor of it? And what might the commission look like? That's ahead. And a resident who said the building was shaking all the time during nearby construction knew possible warning signs before that shocking and horrific tragedy in Surfside, Florida. Stay with us. Breaking news in our politics lead. There will officially be a congressional investigation into the deadly January 6th Capitol attack. Moments ago, two Republicans joined with Democrats to greenlight the select committee created by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The committee will be made up of 13 members, 8 appointed by Pelosi, 5 chosen by Republican leaders, although a senior Democratic aide tells CNN that Pelosi might use one of her picks on a Republican. And beyond that, Pelosi has told CNN she reserves the right to veto anyone that the Republicans pick for their 5 slots. CNN's Ryan Nobles is live on Capitol Hill for us. Ryan, only 2 Republicans voted with Democrats, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. That means a number of Republicans who voted for the original bipartisan commission, 35 of them, I think, a number of Republicans who voted to impeach Trump for inciting the riot, I think 10 of them, have now voted against this committee.
Yeah, that's right, Jake. And many of them who were pretty clear-eyed about what happened on January 6th said that they just do not believe that this select committee accomplishes the same goals that would have been able to be accomplished with that bipartisan independent commission. Among them, Congressman John Katko, who was the author, the co-author of that original legislation, which ultimately was blocked in the United States Senate. But you're right that there were 2 Republicans who did vote yes, and that was Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. And Kinzinger, who I saw right after he voted yes, didn't want to talk to us at that point, but did put out a statement a short time ago and explained why he voted yes. He said, we need a full accounting of what happened on January 6th, 2021. We need answers on who was involved in the insurrection and who played a role in orchestrating it. We need transparency and truth. And Kinzinger went on to say that he would have much rather have that bipartisan independent commission, but it was his party that blocked it. So he felt that this was a necessary step, and that's why he voted yes. Jake.
Ryan, when are we going to find out who's going to be on the committee?
That's an open question right now, but we do believe that the House Speaker does want to move quickly. The big question is just how cooperative is Kevin McCarthy going to be in appointing the five members that he is allowed to appoint in consultation with the Speaker. We tried to press him on it again today as he headed into the chamber, and he essentially said he didn't even know what was happening with the Select Committee and that he still needed to look at it. So there is a chance that he could try and draw out this process by not giving those names to the House Speaker in an orderly fashion. I will note, Jake, I did run into Jim Jordan, of course, a strong supporter of President Trump, someone who's speculated as someone that the House Minority Leader might appoint to that Select Committee. I asked him if he was willing to serve, and he said it is all up to Kevin. So we'll have to see how this plays out.
Jake. All right, Ryan Nobles on Capitol Hill, thank you so much. Let's bring in CNN's Jamie Gangel, who has brand new reporting on the inner workings of the vote. And Jamie, Liz Cheney was just one of only two Republicans who voted yesterday. She just released a statement explaining why she voted to form the Select Committee. What'd she have to say?
She doubled down on GOP leadership, translation Kevin McCarthy, and I would say she tripled down on Donald Trump. She said, since January 6th, the courage of my party's leaders has faded, but the threat to our republic has not. On an almost daily basis, Donald Trump repeats the same statements that provoked violence before. His attacks on our Constitution are accelerating. Our responsibility is to confront these threats, not appease and deflect. And then she went on, Jake, to say, the threat to our democracy is far too grave for grandstanding or political maneuvering. The committee should issue and enforce subpoenas promptly, hire skilled counsel, and do its job thoroughly and expeditiously. The American people need and deserve a full accounting. We must ensure that what happened on January 6, 2021, never happens again. 2 points. I am told by a senior Democratic aide that we will not get names for this committee today. I am also told by a senior Democratic source with knowledge that Nancy Pelosi is seriously considering appointing one Republican to this committee, and I think it's either Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger.
Speaker Pelosi also invited members of the Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Washington, D.C. police departments who protected the Capitol that day, many of whose members were injured, so some seriously. What do you know about their trip to the Capitol ahead of the vote?
I know that several of them actually changed their plans just to be here today. Capitol Hill Police Officer Harry Dunn was there. Metropolitan Police Officer Mike Fanone was there. The family of Brian Sicknick, his mother, his longtime partner, Sandra Garza, they felt, I've spoken to them very strongly, that they be there today and that this Select Committee happened. I will tell you, I spoke to Republican sources who said that Nancy Pelosi was smart to invite them today. And I spoke to other Republican sources who admitted they were embarrassed that there were representatives of the police there today.
All right, Jamie Gangel, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Day 7 and 147 people still missing. Tireless rescue teams fighting some terrible odds and bad weather as the search continues in Surfside, Florida. Stay with us. Internationally today, the death toll in the deadly Florida condo collapse is growing. Overnight, 4 more victims were found in the rubble, bringing the total to at least 16 people confirmed dead, 147 still missing. Now, as CNN's Drew Griffin reports, we're learning critical new clues about the collapse from residents who made it out alive.
We do have a partial collapse of a 13-story apartment building. Multiple patients trapped. We're trying to make our way to them right now.
The frantic moments as rescuers arrived on scene shortly after Champlain Towers South crumbled. Now, 7 days later, the big question remains, why? Engineers tell CNN it will take access to the site, studying crumbled columns, soil samples, and computer modeling to determine the cause. But as the heart-wrenching search for victims continues, survivors are offering new clues. Sarah Neer and her children were startled by what first appeared to be knocking, then something much worse.
It was a big boom, and I was running to see where the sound came from, and I saw all the garage collapse. I couldn't believe it. I thought I'm in a movie.
Thinking it was an earthquake, Neer took her children and ran from her first floor unit, crossing Collins Avenue just at the moment the tower fell.
Then another big boom, and then we didn't see anything.
Her account matching almost exactly the phone call Michael Stratton says he got from his wife inside the building and still unaccounted for, telling the Miami Herald she was speaking frantically about their condo building shaking, then told him she saw a sinkhole where the pool outer window used to be. Then the line went dead.
We know that the deck floor or deck, the pool deck or the garage roof cave in first. That seems to be agreed on, at least by a couple of eyewitnesses.
Engineers who study building collapse say the eyewitness accounts will be crucial in determining where the initial failure occurred and where investigators should begin to search for answers, which Professor Mehrdad Sassani says is that collapsing garage and pool structure.
As it goes down, it could have pulled the columns that were already damaged.
Engineers are quick to point out it is too early to conclude anything, but years of deferred maintenance and repairs left the building's support system in need of extensive renovations. Champlain Tower South had been on notice since 2018 of major structural damage, worries that were reiterated just this past April in a letter describing the conditions as significantly worse. Homeowners were being assessed more than $15 million for an extensive overhaul, but the majority of the work had yet to begin when the towers collapsed.
And Jake, in yet another sign that there was no urgency taking place in Surfside, a town official or the town actually sent that building notice of minor violations just last month, complaining of things like hedges not being clipped or an exit sign that was burned out, minor violations that they were asking them to fix. We also did talk about the shaking that was reported in 2019. You mentioned that at the top of your newscast, Jake. That was being felt when a construction project was going up next door. And one of the board members actually wrote to a town official and said, we're concerned that the digging there is affecting our foundation. That town official wrote back nonchalantly saying, there's nothing I can do. That's because that building was not only across the street, it was in another town, and there was nothing that person could do to affect that construction, apparently. That is the same town official that told the people at Champlain Tower South their building seemed to be in very good shape. Jake?
All right, Drew, thank you so much. Appreciate it. The Delta variant and the dangers for kids who still cannot get the vaccine, the new advice for parents. That's next. In our Healthy Today, to mask or not to mask? An increasingly confusing question, thanks to the Delta variant. Even for the vaccinated, officials in Los Angeles and Illinois are suggesting that even the vaccinated should mask up. And listen to what the U.S. Surgeon General had to say on CNN this morning.
I think it's very reasonable for parents who are living with kids who are unvaccinated, or for that matter, other family members who are unvaccinated, to consider wearing a mask if they're in a high-risk area or if their job requires a high degree of exposure.
That is raising new questions about large gatherings ahead of the long 4th of July holiday weekend, as CNN's Lucy Kafanoff reports.
If you are not vaccinated, then you are in trouble. This is, a serious threat. And we're seeing it spread among unvaccinated people.
A stark warning from the Surgeon General. But as the more transmissible COVID-19 Delta variant continues to spread, the guidance from the CDC for now remains the same.
If there is a shift in the evidence base, in the science, then they will update their guidance accordingly.
If you're vaccinated, you are safe from the variants that are circulating here in the United States.
For parents of young, unvaccinated children, this advice.
I think it's very reasonable for parents who are living with kids who are unvaccinated, or for that matter, other family members who are unvaccinated, to consider wearing a mask.
According to the CDC, the Delta variant accounting for more than a quarter of COVID-19 cases across the country. The daily pace of vaccinations slowing, down to roughly a third from what it was 2 months ago. Health experts concerned about the growing divide.
It's almost like it's going to be two Americas. You're going to have areas where the vaccine rate is high, where there's more than 70% of the population has received at least one dose.
Health experts worry the rise and spread of more transmissible variants could make it even harder to reach herd immunity. New polling shows most U.S. adults who plan to get vaccinated have already done so, with 77% of vaccinated adults saying everyone in their household is vaccinated, while 75% of unvaccinated adults said no one they live with is vaccinated.
So for the unvaccinated, the Delta surge is a major concern that threatens to undo a lot of the progress this nation's made in turning the corner on the pandemic. But today, the CDC director said that vaccinated Americans can, in fact, feel safe in celebrating the 4th of July holiday maskless. She also added there's a lot to be thankful for when looking at how far this country has come in the past 15 months. Jake.
All right, Lucy, thanks so much. Joining us now, Dr. Peter Hotez. He's the co-director for the Center for Vaccine Development at Texas Children's Hospital. Dr. Hotez. So I have an 11-year-old. He's obviously not vaccinated. He's not eligible to get vaccinated until the vaccines become cleared for him or he turns 12. The rest of our household is vaccinated. D.C. has a high rate of vaccination. Should we be wearing masks because of the Delta variant?
Well, I think this is part of the problem is that the CDC is trying to use a one-size-fits-all recommendation for the country rather than being a bit more surgical in identifying hotspot areas where transmission is accelerating. So, for instance, Jake, if you were in southern Missouri right now where the Delta variant is now the highest percentage of virus variants anywhere in the country and the vaccination rate's really low, what that means is a lot of virus transmission going on. So you might do one thing if you're a parent there with little kids or yourself, even if you're vaccinated, versus in Washington, D.C., where the vaccination rate's really high and transmission is slowed dramatically, or up in the Northeast. And I think that's what we need from the CDC is to be able to cut it a little finer, come up with a map, a force of infection map that combines those two variables, the low vaccination rates, high Delta. Those places are at great risk for lots of transmission, including some vaccinated individuals who will have breakthrough infections. And I think that's what we need to see next coming out of Atlanta.
The American Academy of Pediatrics just told CNN that children under the age of 12 should be the ones who wear masks. Do you agree?
Yeah, especially if they're indoor settings, bringing them into stores or restaurants, because this Delta variant, Jake, is like nothing we've seen before. In 2021, we've been talking about the B.1.1.7 variant from the UK that's 50% more transmissible than the original lineage. This Delta variant is 50% more than that, so it's twice as much. So pretty much we're going to see a lot wherever the Delta variant is accelerating, wherever low levels of vaccinations are around, we're going to see a lot of infections. And so absolutely, we're going to have to mask up kids when they're indoors, at least until we get our arms around this Delta variant.
Many schools in the U.S. start in August, and for children to be fully vaccinated by the start of the school year, the ones who are eligible, 12 and older, they're going to have to get their first dose soon. How close are we to approving vaccines for kids 11 and under?
It's hard to know. We're hearing different things from the companies, and you know we can't really rush these trials because of we're always a bit more cautious with the young kids. So an optimistic forecast is by the fall, but it may not be to the end of the year potentially. So the way you handle that is as follows: if you've got a place where large numbers of adolescents are vaccinated and the teachers and staff are vaccinated, you're going to have a very safe middle school and high school. And if a high percentage of the community is vaccinated, elementary schools can open safely as well. But you take a place where there's low vaccination coverage overall. Look in the South. We've got states like Louisiana, Mississippi, where only around 10% of the adolescents are vaccinated. There's going to be a lot of transmission in both middle schools, high schools, and the elementary schools. So this is the problem. We, you know, Dr. Fauci says two Americas. I use the term two COVID nations. We got to bring that other COVID nation up to speed in terms of vaccinations. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of complications as we move into the fall.
Right now, CNN's I got to interrupt. I'm sorry, Dr. Hotez. We got to go to Elkins Park, Pennsylvania, where Bill Cosby is about to speak.
All along, he never should have been prosecuted for this. He had every right to rely on the prosecutor's word. And they pulled the rug out from underneath him because of politics, because of the court of public opinion. And that is not how our system should operate. Absolutely. When that happens, there cannot be a just sentence. And if there had been a just verdict and a just sentence, we wouldn't be here fighting. But there was not a just sentence and not a just verdict. And I think it's really important that we keep our eye on the ball, that our Constitution is sacred, and that we need to uphold it at all times. And I'm glad that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court saw that.
Right there. I'm very proud of the team that we put together. Very proud to be part of this case. We always thought that eventually this is where it would end up. Mr. Cosby and I had many, many talks over the last couple of years. I predicted it, and we're here. It's a good day for the Cosby family.
Mr. Cosby, how does it feel to be home?
Well, he is extremely happy to be home. He looks forward to reuniting with his wife and his children. And obviously, this has been a hard 3 years for this entire family. And it's really a blessing for him. And he says, you know, his heart is just beating really fast, and he's happy to be here.
And we have Ashley here, who worked on the case. Ashley, say a few words. Ashley Cohen.
I'm just honored to be part of such an amazing team. These lawyers did an incredible, incredible job, and I'm so thankful to be a part of it and to help Mr. Cosby, and I'm just proud to be here and watch him get released.
And this wonderful attorney, Haley, you see right here. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Her father was in prison with Mr. Cosby, and he sent a message to Mr. Cosby before he left today for her. Say a few words.
He did. He said that he loves me very, very much. And
what's your father's name?
Richard. And I, in return, love him very, very much in return, and I was glad that Mr. Cosby and him got to know each other while we were together, and I'm blessed and so grateful to be here to see Mr. Cosby.
And in closing, this was a unwanted 3-year vacation. This was a unwanted 3-year vacation that Mr. Cosby never asked for. But in hindsight, we're happy that he got it because he was able to pull the covers off of the corruption in Montgomery County. But the crooked DA, but the crooked judge, Steele and O'Neill, these same people fined this man, this American citizen. I don't know how a DA has that much time on his hand. Fined him $2,010 for not cutting his yard. I was on the way to pay that fine when I got a call from Nick DeHaan. And Nick told me that they had vacated the conviction. You know, what we saw today was justice. Justice for all Americans. Mr. Cosby, conviction being overturned, it's for the world and all Americans who are being treated unfairly by the judicial system and some bad officers, because all officers are not bad. So we want to thank this entire team. We want to thank Mrs. Cosby, her family. I want to thank my family. And just thank you all for those who decided to tell the truth and allowed us to tell the truth when we had the opportunity.
Mr. Cosby, how are you feeling? How are you feeling, Mr. Cosby? Mr. Cosby, how are you feeling? Are you happy to be out?
Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
All right, so Bill Cosby and his legal team heading back to his house in Elkins Park, right outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We heard a lot of people in the crowd cheering or yelling at him. We heard his legal representatives talking about what they perceived to be an injustice of Mr. Cosby having spent the previous 3 years in prison. We did not hear Bill Cosby speak himself. He was just released this afternoon. He appears to be in somewhat frail condition. Let's go back to our legal experts. We have with us former federal prosecutor Jennifer Rogers, as well as criminal defense attorney Joey Jackson. Jennifer, let me start with you. So we did not hear Bill Cosby speak, although he did make an appearance. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I mean, I'm sure he's overwhelmed and happy to have his lawyers speak for him. You know, I was interested in what they said. You know, they're celebrating, as they should. Their client has walked free. It's a big victory for them. But to allege political corruption, and I mean, you know, they're making a lot of strong allegations here about what happened with the charges against him, which, you know, I don't think they have anything to support that, particularly given that, you know, no one has said that their client is innocent and there's been absolutely no evidence of any sort of corruption. This really was an overturning based on a legal technicality, and frankly, one that I think the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania got wrong. So, you know, while I appreciate their celebration, I think they're a little heavy-handed with what they're representing the facts to be.
Well, let me drill down on that, if you would. Why do you think they got it wrong? I mean, the argument being that was made that was persuasive to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was that the district attorney for Montgomery County, Bruce Castor at the time, entered into a deal with Cosby, basically saying, we're not going to prosecute you, but by saying that, you no longer have the right to refuse to testify against yourself. Therefore, Cosby had to testify in depositions for the civil case, and it was in that testimony, that those depositions, where he basically admitted using drugs on multiple women, leading to his ability to sexually assault or rape them. And then that testimony was used against him despite the fact that the prosecutor said they wouldn't. Now, I'm not talking about justice. We don't have a justice system in this country. We have a legal system in this country. But you don't see grounds there at all?
So what the Supreme Court said, it was not that there was a deal. The Supreme Court agreed with the lower court. There was no legally enforceable deal. There was no agreement. And they also found that there was no valid claim for immunity. He was not granted immunity. So what they ended up finding was what's called promissory estoppel. It's a legal concept. It is grounded in due process, but it's not itself a constitutional concept, that because the DA said he wouldn't continue to prosecute, even though they didn't make an actual legally enforceable deal to that effect, they couldn't then go back on that, even with a later DA. The question is, the legal question is, was that reasonable that Bill Cosby relied on that? The defendant has to rely on it, and it has to be reasonable. And the question is, was it reasonable or not that without an actual agreement and without an actual effective grant of immunity, he would not try to effectuate his Fifth Amendment rights? I don't think that was reasonable, but legal minds can differ.
And what do you think, Joey?
Listen, you know, these cases are difficult and you're going to have a battle of the narratives. Obviously, you're going to have Cosby's people saying it's a miscarriage of justice. It's corruption. It's wrong. He shouldn't have been prosecuted. Nothing to see here. It's an outrage and everything else. And you're going to have victims who themselves are outraged and concerned and upset about a legal system that they felt didn't work for them. But I think as a matter of law, in evaluating and looking at the opinion just as an objective analyst, I think the court got it right. Right. And, you know, you can yell and scream and say, you know, ABC, and what about the victims? Yes, we have to be mindful of that. But from a legal perspective, you can't be a prosecutor and you can't say, you know what, you're not going to be prosecuted. And then I forfeit all my rights and I speak and I am prosecuted and you allow that. You can't allow that. And you have to look at the precedent being set. And I think the precedent is what the court looked at. And as a result of that, they said, we're barring this prosecution. You have to enforce what the prosecutor says. You have to rely upon what a prosecutor says.
Yeah, which is a technicality we should point out, even if you think it's an important one. But it's impossible to read those depositions and not conclude that Bill Cosby was guilty. Whether or not whether or not he's in jail right now is another matter. But he did admit to drugging women and then sexually assaulting them. Jennifer Rogers, Joey Jackson, thanks so much. We're going to have much more on this in the coming hour. But now let's turn to our world lead, because the top American military commander in Afghanistan is warning quite clearly of the possibility of a chaotic civil war to come, as officials tell CNN that the United States is just days away, days from finishing the formal troop withdrawal, months before President Biden's September 11th goal, marking the end of America's longest war, America's role in it anyway. As many as 1,000 troops will remain behind after the formal exit to guard the U.S. Embassy and to protect the airport in Kabul. Let's bring in Anna Koren, who's on the ground in Kabul, Afghanistan. And Anna, what are you hearing from Afghans?
Yeah, Jake, there's a real sense of disbelief and abandonment. You know, everyone knew that U.S. troops were going to be leaving, that they couldn't stay in country forever, but that they wouldn't be leaving under these specific circumstances, with the Taliban, you know, launching offenses across the country, gaining ground, and having, you know, basically the upper hand. They're in control of more than 100 out of 370 districts around the country. We've learning in the last 24 hours, another six districts have fallen. So there is this momentum.
All right,
the Taliban will return to power in Afghanistan. You know, it's just a matter of time. I spoke to a friend of mine who has been here, born here, raised here, and I asked him, you know, how do you feel with the U.S. leaving? And it was just a sense of dread. You know, there is no future for him and his family. And he is not alone. He said if there is the smallest window, he will jump through it and not spend one more hour in this country. And this is a man who's educated, who was the future of Afghanistan, yet he feels he has no future in this country. He is not alone, Jake. There are hundreds of Afghans who turn up to the passport office every single day. It was shut by the government, citing COVID. Since it's reopened, there have been long queues of people trying to get visas to get out of here. A US human rights lawyer who I spoke to said she has never seen the sort of fear that she is witnessing now. She's been in and out of this country for 13 years. And she says what is going on now, this rapid withdrawal, is reprehensible, Jake.
And Anna, the U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued the statement calling on the Taliban to end violence as U.S. service members depart. Is there any chance the Taliban would heed that request?
The Taliban is on a mission. They are here to regain control. They have made that perfectly clear. And that is what we are witnessing, certainly in the north of the country, which is not necessarily a place where we would see the Taliban. And yet they are taking over serious territory. The Afghan National Forces, that they are suffering mass casualties on the ground. And you mentioned that statement issued by the embassy, you know, just a short time ago, telling the Taliban to stop the violence. But this is not going to stop. They have a mission, and that is to take back control, Jake.
All right, Anna Korn, live in Afghanistan. Stay safe, and thank you so much. The man who led the Pentagon at the start of America's longest war, former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, died today. Rumsfeld served as Pentagon chief twice, first under President Gerald Ford when he became the youngest Secretary of Defense in history, and then the second time under President George W. Bush during the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, including the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. I interviewed Rumsfeld several times, including in 2013 when I asked if he had any road rules for then President Obama.
When I was a Navy pilot, the rule, if you're lost, is to climb, conserve, and confess. Get some altitude, take a deep breath, and get on the radio and say you're lost. To the extent that credibility gets eroded over time, you lose your ability to lead.
In his long tenure in public service, Rumsfeld was seen as controversial and steadfast, famously helping first responders and refusing to leave the Pentagon after it was attacked on September 11th. Moments ago, President Bush issued a statement saying in part, quote, a man of intelligence, integrity, and almost inexhaustible energy. Rumsfeld never paled before tough decisions and never flinched from responsibility. We mourn an exemplary public servant and a very good man, unquote. Donald Rumsfeld was 88 years old. Coming up, we'll be right back with more breaking news. Bill Cosby released from prison and is back home, the lawyer for dozens of Cosby's accusers. She'll join us not live next.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.